Well, with the beginning of the autumn schedule, it is time to reopen our window on the world, which is our almost weekly opportunity to look at the world from the Christian point of view. Tonight I begin with the only animal, I think, that can dare lay claim to the title, the King of the Beasts. Really, there aren't any other serious candidates. For what other animal has the regal bearing of a lion with its magnificent mane? What other animal sits with such quiet dignity enthroned on its four great paws? What other animal has such a mighty and awesome roar? There is only one King of the Beasts, and only the lion has title to that throne. Some of you know that my recent preaching tour in South Africa gave me a rare opportunity to visit a lion park near Johannesburg and to see wild lions up close and in person. As our guide drove into our first enclosure, suddenly they were there, the small pride of lions. And after watching a lioness with her young cubs for a time, we circled around and drove through the fields to get a closer view of a full-grown male sitting in the sun, the lord of all that he surveyed. He was no more than 10 feet away from us, and the only thing separating us from him was the width of our windshield. He looked absolutely magnificent, his tawny mane golden in the late afternoon sun, his large brown eyes expressing a depth of character, almost, it seemed, of wisdom, his stately expression conveying a sense of quiet strength, a king among beasts, if ever there was one. Suddenly the lion stood up, and I felt the tingling thrill that only comes in the presence of something that is truly awesome. Even that simple act of standing up showed the lion's powerful athleticism. Every muscle of the great beast was alive. Every nerve ending was alert. One had the sense in that moment that anything might happen, that the lion could do anything it wanted to do, absolutely anything. We were in the presence of greatness and also danger. We knew this because our guides had told us a cautionary tale about an unfortunate tourist who tried to pose with the lions for a photograph and came, I must say, to an unhappy end. Later on, we saw the lord of a different pride display a completely different aspect of the lion's temperament. The lion was sitting in the sun with his consort, his queen, if you will. She stood up and stretched and prepared to walk away, but before she left, she took her leave of the king by gently nuzzling his face. And as she stood kissing her mate, the end of her tail gently curled around his mane. The couple's interaction expressed astonishing intimacy as the mighty king tenderly embraced his lover. Now, you may know that the lion is a familiar image from Scripture, where it is usually portrayed as a fierce and violent hunter. People in biblical times feared the lion as a predator that killed their flocks and herds. They had also learned to respect the sound of the lion's mighty voice. "The lion has roared," wrote the prophet Amos. "Who will not fear?" And if a lion happened to attack a person, there was no hope of escape unless God intervened. It's an image that David used, possibly with reference to his own experience as a shepherd, when he said, "O Lord, my God, save me from all my pursuers and deliver me, lest like a lion they tear my soul apart, rending it in pieces with none to deliver." The Bible also uses these mighty beasts as a symbol of royalty. It gives to them by revelation the same title that they received from creation. The lion is the king. And so in his final testament to his 12 sons, the tribes of Israel, Jacob conferred this royal blessing when he said, "Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's son shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's cub. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He stooped down. He crouched as a lion. Who dares to rouse him?" In other words, the line of Jacob would run through the royal tribe of Judah. And even though he was not his father's eldest son, Judah would receive the praise and worship and obedience of his brothers. He would be given the strength to crush his enemies the way that a lion crushes its prey. And when Judah came into his kingdom, people would not dare to disturb him any more than they would dare to rouse a sleeping lion. And of course, Jacob's prophecy came true. David and the other great kings of Israel came from the tribe of Judah. They ruled their brothers. They defeated their enemies, as Jacob had promised. And in time, their great kingdom came to be associated with the image of the lion. And so, for example, King Solomon's golden throne was flanked with 12 golden lions. And eventually, the same image was used to describe the greatest king of all, Jesus Christ. For in his end times revelation of the church and the glory of God, John described the great king who alone held the power of divine judgment. And he said, "Behold, the lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has conquered so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals." You see, Jesus Christ is the Lion King. He is the beautiful, powerful, and may I say dangerous ruler of the universe. Therefore, the Lion of the tribe of Judah is the perfect title for him. It speaks of his majestic authority and mighty dignity. It also declares that he is a king of his own tribe, who uses his fierce power to defend the people he loves. And should we not give this mighty king the reverence that he deserves, worshiping him with trembling and with awe? For when you are in the living presence of a lion, the lion is the thing that commands your attention and demands your respect.